I'm buying on Rich Hill, and you know, there's always the chance that the ride ends tomorrow, which is really sad. And but that's also why we should enjoy every moment we have with Rich Hill before it's gone.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 91 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of BP, and I'm joined as always by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella, the BP fantasy team. Guys, how's it going tonight?
Good. How you doing, George?
I'm doing pretty well, not as good as Danny Valencia, who, since coming off the disabled list, is hitting .414 with 6 home runs. So, very excited about that. It's been awesome. Mike, you there? What's up?
Not much. I'm watching the Met game, and there's a man in an orange suit with an orange towel on his head, and I got distracted.
This is the weirdest start to a podcast we've ever had.
That's saying something.
It's not even close. I don't know what's going on. Let's take care of some housekeeping, then we'll dive into the expert fab. We got a lot to talk about tonight. So you can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Brett is at Dynasty Guru, and Mike is at Mike Gianella. You can email us, flagsflyforever at baseballperspectives.com. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. So we're going to take a quick break, come back. We're going to dive into expert fab. We've got some cool players to talk about. We'll be right back. And we're back here on Flags Fly Forever, and we're going to dive into our usual weekly installment of the expert fab review. Mike and Brett co-own a team in Labor Mixed, so that is where we're going to start. The big buys were Oswaldo Arcia and Irvin Santana, each for $8. The Twins are terrible, but these two guys were of interest on the free agent pool. I'll throw it out to you, Brett, first.
I am an advocate of Oswaldo Arcia. I think, you know, I highlighted him at the beginning of the season as a guy who I like as an end game target in AL only leagues, and he's certainly played, you know, above that point now where he's rosterable in deeper mixed leagues. There's the news just came out, I think, a couple hours ago that Eddie Rosario is headed down to the minors. So Arcia is looking at probably a fair amount of playing time while Buxton and Rosario are down there. I mean, it's him or Robbie Grossman, and I imagine that they will play it as a platoon. I mean, the Twins are not going anywhere, and you know, if there was ever a time to figure out whether Oswaldo Arcia is truly in the Twins' plan, this is probably that time. You know, he is kind of what he is. He's got some power. He's gonna have a low batting average. He's gonna strike out an ass ton of times, and You know, if you're in a deep mix league, you hope he runs into enough contact that that he's usable for, you know, for at least a stretch. Mike, what are your thoughts on Arcia?
I agree with most of that. I'm not as high on Arcia as you are, and my concerns with him are more real life concerns than fantasy concerns. I agree the power potential is tremendous. The defense, from what I've seen, still looks bad, and the Twins at this point, unfortunately, are a team that seem to have a bunch of players who should be at DH. So I don't know how much, you know, he's going to have to hit and hit toward the top end of what you're expecting out of him for them to justify caring. But I agree. At this point, you know, and Byron Buxton, by the way, is hurt. He has a bit of a minor back issue. I know Byron Buxton is hurt in the minors, or Byron Buxton is hurt is just kind of something you can almost say in your sleep by now. But yeah, Arcia is going to play, and he should get a chance. I agree that Rosario is not very good. I mentioned this on a previous podcast. Arcia last year was my dark horse, and we did that series to lead the American League in home runs. That was obviously, you know, kind of a fun projection. I'm not saying in a serious way, but yeah, the power's there, and you know, he's probably the guy of these low end, you know, $7-$8 pickups in the labor mix this week who I like.
So did you guys pick anyone up this week specifically, or
we did not. We considered making a small move or two, but we ended up passing.
We talked about Robbie Ray, and we wound up. Sean wanted to put Sean Manaea, Brett wanted to put Sean Manaea, and I didn't, and the results worked out in Brett's favor, at least in his first outing against the Rangers. So that was kind of our move for the week, was just to fiddle with our staff.
I actually watched that game, and there were like 20 fly ball outs for Manaea. It was pretty crazy. Everything was in the air, and it all stayed in the park. So that was refreshing for once.
Well, Oakland helps, you know. That was, yeah. That was Brett's argument, was, you know, if you're, as Brett put it, he was kind of right. You know, if you're going to own Manaea in a 15-team mix and you're getting two home starts out of him and you're not going to start him, like, why even have him?
And the same argument, I guess, would apply to a guy like Matt Andrees, who also was picked up this week. He's pitched really well in his brief career. He's 26 years old. He's pitched well in the Trop. He's got like a 3.08 earned run average at home, but it's over 4 on the road. He threw a complete game his last time out. Not a big strikeout guy, but he's been pretty interesting for the Rays if he can stick in that rotation. Brett, have you had a chance to watch him at all? What do you think about Matt Andrees?
Yeah, there's nothing inherently wrong with Andrees. I think he's a perfectly reasonable sort of back-end guy in a league like Labor, which is 15-team mixed. But, you know, I don't see him sticking for very long there, and that's the big problem. I mean, they have Blake Snell, who's pretty much ready to go as soon as Tampa decides they've saved enough money. And, you know, that means Andrees gets, what, 3-4 more starts, probably, at most. So, you know, I get it. He definitely should be owned. You know, 7 is a little bit more aggressive than I would have gone. But, you know, it pretty much was what it took to get him. I mean, he had a number of other bids on him.
He went for 52 in top mix, you know, the $1,000 budget, and 27 in the top mix draft, you know, which would kind of equate to 5 or 2. So yeah, I agree with Brett. A little aggressive, but also not a guy you were snagging for a buck or two either.
I like that he works quickly. He's aggressive. He doesn't walk guys. He's not going to strike anybody out really. But I've liked what I've seen so far. If you're definitely in a deeper format, I kind of like what he can give you. Especially at home, if you can spot him exclusively in Tampa Bay, I think there is some nice streaming potential there. Anyone else on the mixed side that's interesting? There are guys, a lot of pitchers, you know, Ivan Nova, Dylan G, Matt Cain, Folty. Anybody worth talking about? Mike, I'll throw it to you first.
You know, the guy who jumps out at me a little bit, and I wrote about him, is Brandon Guyer. Mm-hmm. He went for 2. You know, I like the power potential. You know, as I pointed out, he was someone who had shoulder surgery way back in 2012. He had some difficulty or a slow recovery from that. You can kind of see the power potential with what he's done. Now, obviously, it's a small sample size that's not going to keep up. But if you look at some of the batted ball data and the distance, if you go back to 2015, this isn't just a small sample size fluke. I believe this is a hitter who could be a little bit better than what we've seen in the numbers. I don't want to oversell it. I'm not saying this is a guy who's going to hit 25 to 30 home runs, but I could see him sticking in that lineup and hitting 15 to 20. So I believe it's a solid pickup for mix or deep mixed.
Yeah, he's leading off right now with Forsyth on the DL. So that's I like him as well. Brett, anybody for you?
Not really. I mean, Guyer was I made one move in tout mixed, which we'll talk about really briefly after this. But it was a contingent bid. My first bid was on Guyer, although it was a $3 bid, so it wasn't really a kind of get me over the hump bid in case anyone else didn't want to buy him, which was clearly not the case. The one guy who I'm gonna watch somewhat closely over the next week or two is Matt Cain. Not to the point where I'd want to roster him yet, but you know, he's starting to miss a couple more bats. You know, it's been an awful long time since Matt Cain was fantasy relevant, but I'm not going to completely rule out the fact that he could be at some point this season. It's just, it's at least become something worth watching, at least for me.
Matt Cain's innings totals the last three seasons. In 2016, 46. 2015, 60.2. 2014, 90.3. Not great.
No, it's not what you want to see. But especially for, what, he's getting 24, 25 million a year?
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
I believe that Madison Bumgarner at about 8 or 9 million a year, I don't have it in front of me, is the cheapest pitcher this year in that starting five.
Matt Cain is making $20 million this year, so that's nice. I'm on board with that for him. All right, so you said you made one move in Tout Mixed Auction. I'll let you.
I did. I replaced Billy Hamilton temporarily, although he got called back up from the leave where
bereavement.
Bereavement leave. That's the word I was looking for. So I picked him up, and then I ended up dropping Jordy Mercer before the week started and played him as well. But I picked up Rajai Davis, who is someone going into the week that just looked like he should be owned in this league, and I could use a couple of steals, and I have some flexibility between middle infield and outfield, the way it works out is it has been pretty nice so far. He in his first two games he has an 818 on base. And has scored 6 runs and has 4 RBI, and then he hit a home run today. So sometimes it's good to be skillful when you're playing fantasy baseball, and sometimes it's good to just be a witch.
Or to play the Cincinnati Reds pitching staff, which is just abysmal.
I'd be lying if I said that that wasn't, and if I didn't see that and saw it was a nice matchup, but this is much more than I was expecting. I will not turn it down, though.
I'm at a loss for words at how bad the Reds pitching staff is. It's unbelievable. I mean, Alfredo Simone, I don't even know. He couldn't get anyone out. It was awful.
No, he's very bad.
They have some promise in the parts of the rotation. What really jumps out to me, and I mentioned this, I think last week when we talked about a little bit, the bullpen is so bad. like you have to go back to, I think it was the 2010 Diamondbacks to find a bullpen that's just this bad, where there isn't even a pitcher really, he's promised, or he's okay and could get better. Like, no, it's just a bad bullpen.
Well, the problem is all their good bullpen arms are in the rotation.
That's, I see what you did there.
That's fair.
That's
all right.
True.
No joke. Tout Wars NL. Tommy Joseph. I want to say Tommy John every time I see his name. Why Tommy Joseph, Mike?
Well, this isn't my bid. This
I know, but why?
Well,
I don't.
Why 101 out of 1,000, or why Tommy Joseph in general?
Yeah, it's both.
Well, it's an NL only. I believe the hope here is that eventually the Phillies will come to their senses on Ryan Howard and cut him. If the Phillies, I'm going to get in trouble because I live here and a lot of people, from here listen to me. I don't believe this team is going to continue on this trajectory. But if they are, and if they're going to even quasi contend, you have to find out what you have with some young players. And Joseph, he's not that young. He's 24, but he was hitting at Lehigh Valley. He had a concussion or a couple concussions, and you have to kind of see what you get him. I don't think there's going to be much here. But the wise thing for the Phillies to do is to let Ryan Howard go and let Joseph play every day. The problem is, so far, they've stuck with a pretty strict platoon with him. Now, Pete McCann was on the radio here today on one of the talk stations, and he was saying that he is going to try to get Joseph in more against right-handers and try to work him in. And that's what I see happening. I think eventually Joseph is going to squeeze Howard out. And as I said, it's an NL only. That's kind of the gamble. What you're hoping for is that Joseph works out as a 20 home run guy, low average. I wouldn't expect anything there. I think that's generous. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but in an NL only, that's your gamble. That's the play. And if you look at some of the other pickups, and particularly some of the other hitting pickups this week, this is about as good as it gets.
Brian Walton, a Masters ball, picked up Alex Reyes. Of course, he follows the Cardinals prospects very closely with the Cardinals Nation blog. What do you know about Alex Reyes in terms of what a potential timeline looks for him coming back this season? Not necessarily when he'll be in the majors, if that's even a possibility, but do we know anything as far as what his timetable to return to pitching with the Cardinals organization looks like? Because he's currently suspended, but do we have any idea what that looks like right now?
Yeah, I think he just reported to extended spring. I think he's going to play in minor league games before the end of the month. It was a 50-game suspension, and so that leaves him like right around Memorial Day coming back. Yeah, the bigger problem is not how good Reyes is, because I think he could be really good. The problem is, where is he going to pitch? You know, it's not like St. Louis is lacking for some injury-prone pitchers, but you know, unless someone gets hurt, no one in that rotation is going anywhere. So it makes me think that, yeah, he's kind of going to be getting stretched out as a, you know, break glass in case of emergency guy. But you know, they already have a break glass in case of emergency guy in Tyler Lyons, and I could see the Cardinals have a very long history of breaking in really exciting arms in the bullpen. They do. People talk about this all the time. They do it all the time. At this point, my money is on Alex Reyes being in the majors as a reliever this year, and then kind of seeing where the chips fall in 2017 and making a decision from there. I mean, it's similar to the Carlos Martinez situation, where you know Martinez's stuff is, you know, Reyes' stuff is a little bit more electric than Martinez, but you know, same idea, great stuff. Not some questions of whether they could stick in a rotation. Reyes is not quite the will he hold up in a rotation. Reyes is more of a will he develop a third pitch and progress that way, because he's a beast of a human being. He's just, you know, I don't know if it's even in the Cardinals' plans to make him a starter, barring injuries. I mean, their rotation is good. Their rotation has not been an issue. So, you know, he's certainly someone who could hold plenty of value in NL-only leagues as a reliever. So the stash makes sense, and I do think we see him this year. But I don't think it's until August, and I don't think it's in the rotation.
Yeah, fastball curveball combo is deadly. He's going to be good when he gets up. So I'm with you. I think he's up at some point, but I don't know what type of role. It's more likely out of the bullpen than anything. So I'm with you there. Mike, anyone else who's interesting that was picked up in NL only that you would like to talk about?
I don't even want to talk about the players I picked up, so not really, no.
Who'd you pick up, by the way?
I picked up Adam Rosales and Jose Pirella, just because I figured taking two guesses on the Padres was better than none. Ben Paulson got sent down, so I needed a hitter. It's just a mess right now. I'm waiting for Jose Reyes to come back, which just isn't, at this point, doesn't really even look that great.
Riveting stuff. Scintillating NL only talk.
I kind of undersell Reyes. I mean, he could actually be fine. And I, you know, it occurs to me I shouldn't gloss over this topic. So, you know, Reyes, you know, as we always do, we'll put the real life implications of that aside. It appears that he should be, the suspension should be over at the end of this month. And whether it's with the Rockies or another team, he's going to play this year. So, in an only league, you know, the gamble I put down a $7 bid on him. I think that should pay off. You know, the question is, you know, in a mixed league, in a deeper mixed league, you know, I'm kind of want to ask you about this, Brett. You know, where do you see Reyes falling? Because, you know, this is a good segue maybe for our next segment. But, you know, where do you see him falling among the shortstops the rest of the way?
I think as soon as he plays, he's a top 10 shortstop for the rest of the season.
Okay. I think you're higher on him than I am, just because I have a feeling there's some baggage that's going to come with this. And I'm, you know, I'm not talking about like emotional baggage, but just the baggage of the layoff. But yeah, I kind of think people are I'm not that high on him, but I think people really are just writing him off completely, and that's a mistake. I can agree with that.
I don't even know. I mean, let's be honest. I don't even know if I'm that high on him. I mean, shortstop is not. Is not really a bastion of fantasy value. I mean, there are guys that are valuable, but the top 10 is filled with players that, you know, kind of jump out as regression candidates and or steals only guys, and Reyes could do that. I mean, Eduardo Nunez is the 12th best shortstop in fantasy at this point. Zach Cozart is 13th. Marcus Semien is 14th. I like Semien, but I mean, if you hit 210, I think top 10 is somewhat realistic, especially if he's in Colorado for a good chunk of time, because he's going to need to be out on the field for the Rockies to be able to trade him. They're not going to be able to trade him sight unseen.
Where do you think, what do you think happens there, though? Do you think he plays short and Story goes somewhere else on the diamond? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I think Story kind of bounces around a little bit. They play Reyes, you know, not every day, but, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. And Story kind of picks up. I wouldn't be surprised if they played him in weird spots. I mean, they could play him in the outfield against left-handed pitching. They could do all kinds of things. They could play him at first base. Who knows?
I mean, okay, I guess, again, you know, I don't want to talk about this, you know, for the next 20 minutes, but I hear a lot of people, and I hear a lot of smart people, not just people speculating or who are mad at him, who are like, oh, he'll never play a game for the Rockies again, or this won't happen, or that would happen. But what Brett's saying makes a lot of sense. Unless the Rockies are going to outright cut Jose Reyes and give up all of that money, the idea that he won't play a game for the Rockies again seems very short-sighted. He will play for them. They likely will try to trade him, not even so much because, you know, of the suspension and because of what he did, but just because of the direction they're going. And he will have some fantasy value. So if you're in a deeper format, try not to have too much of a knee-jerk reaction. You know, I kind of heard Eric Carabel put it well on the ESPN podcast earlier this week talking about Reyes. We don't have to break bread with these guys. We don't have to like them. It's not about that at all. You know, from a personal standpoint, I don't like this at all, but that's not what this is about.
Yeah. I mean, you can – real life opinions aside, this is a fantasy podcast, and these players are amalgamations of statistics. So,
absolutely,
take that with whatever grain of salt you want. I won't hold it against you if you just don't want to roster Jose Reyes on your fantasy team. That's your decision. It's your team, but you know, that doesn't mean he's not going to be a person in real life because you didn't roster him on your fantasy team.
Well, that's a good point too. Did you have anyone else in the NL that you wanted to talk about, Brett?
I have a person.
You do? Well,
go ahead.
I'm not sure if he's on a team or not. He probably is, but I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on Trace Thompson, who's actually been playing well for the Dodgers. He has 4 home runs in the last week. There's been some speculation that he could unseat Carl Crawford for a starting job. You know, he's just, you know, your classic toolsy outfielder who seems to be somewhat putting it together. I know Mao, our dear friend Mauricio Rubio, has always loved the guy, but do you think this is somewhat for real what he's doing right now? Because I really like what I've seen in the last month or two with him. I just come away watching his at-bats very impressed.
He is owned, by the way. Steve Gardner of USA Today has him and picked him up in one of the first fab reporting periods. My take on Thompson, I like him. I don't think I'm as high on him as Mao was, but I could see him being a solid option. The one thing I'll kind of say is that when Andre Ethier comes back, you can see them sitting Crawford and some of the other options they have for Thompson. I have a hard time seeing them sitting Ethier, so it might be back to the bench or Triple A for him, but the potential is certainly there for Thompson and for that power to kind of play, even though you know, he's slugging over 600. That's obviously not going to keep up.
I mean, he's nearly doubled his slugging percentage in the last week or two. But the playing time concerns are obvious, but I like the talent, and I think he's somewhat relevant for like a deeper mix if you had the ability to play him when he's in the lineup. I think that's valuable.
Yeah, I like, you know, this reminds me, you know, Brett a couple of years ago wrote a great article about maximizing like platoons and splits. Mm-hmm. And
yep.
In a deep mix where you can do that, Thompson's a great guy to put in there if you look at the Dodger schedule and play it that way.
I've literally been doing that for the last week or so.
Great DFS play too for that purpose.
Yeah, and deeper mixed, it's I love just platooning spots. It's really fun if you just play the matchups. Brett, did you have anything on Thompson? Because I know you've been probably following him for a couple of years now.
Yeah, the big thing with Thompson was always whether he was going to make enough contact for the raw tools to play out, and you know he has been he has been enough.
All right, so we're back here on Flags Fly Forever, and we're going to jump right into our second segment. Brett and Mike are going to have the lead on this week, so I'm going to throw you guys the keys. Get in the car, drive it around the block, whatever you want to do with it. We're going to talk about re-ranking and rankings updates, so take it away, guys.
So I thought it would be interesting to discuss the process of re-ranking before we actually put out our re-ranks at BP. Early next week, we're going to have positional rankings, new positional rankings updated as of press time. And they are going to be, for a lot of players, they're going to be quite different than our preseason rankings. And I kind of want to just talk about different, not necessarily about where we have players, because we can, you know, that you can read on the site when it comes out, and that we can talk about on future podcasts, but more just what stuff we look at 6 weeks into a season that makes us radically change our views on a player, how much we line up preseason expectation versus early season performance. So I'll kind of kick that question out to you, Mike, to start. So if you had to ballpark from a percentage standpoint an average player that you are ranking right now 6 weeks into the season, what percentage of it is still based on your preseason valuation, and what percentage of it is based on what you've seen so far?
Well, obviously it has to do with the player, and you know, for certain players, you know, like Aledmys Diaz, for example, is not going to fall into this calculation, but it's still 75% preseason, 25% what I've seen so far. And, you know, that's about what we've played in the year. I just don't really like to look at a fast start or a slow start and get too excited or get too wrapped up in it. Now, there are certain players where if you can see they're doing something differently, I think this applies more to pitchers than hitters, but if you can see they're doing something differently, if you see something in their approach, you know, whether it's good or bad, that's where I might make the adjustment. But there aren't too many players that I'm going to move up. Now, an example of somebody that I am planning on moving up, Robinson Cano, we had him kind of as a four-star guy. Based on what I've seen so far, both with the stats and on the field, I'm pretty comfortable moving him to an elite status. Where I'm reluctant is, you know, taking a guy who previously was middle of the road and is doing very well and saying, okay, I'm going to bump him up to an elite status. That's where you want to be careful.
Yeah, there's always some caution you should take, but then on the other hand, too much caution, and then you are kind of anchoring to something that might just not be reality anymore. So it's walking a fine line between having faith that what you thought in the preseason was not was based in sound fact and reasoning versus, you know, making sure you're just not making sure you're not letting your previous decisions really staple themselves to how you feel throughout the year.
So, I mean, Brett, what are like some of the big concerns that you have as far as re-ranking in terms of, you know, as far as like playing time, other variables like that? What are some of the big concerns that you try and account for when you look at the process overall?
Yeah, I think playing time is really the biggest thing that will move guys up and down. If you have a if you have a guy who was, you know, was slated to be a fourth outfielder who is now playing every day, you obviously start getting into situations where they need to be ranked drastically differently. Even if from a skill standpoint, nothing's really all that surprising anymore. Just kind of scrolling through the my draft of the outfield ranks. I mean, there are certainly guys that have moved, you know, somewhat significantly in each direction, but you know, it's more the performance thing that I like to think about, because it's really easy to get carried away with current performance. It's really easy to get carried away with guys that just have those glowing numbers that look like they're, you know, burgeoning superstars. And the guy who I want to use as a prime example of this is someone who, you know, Mike mentioned Aledmys Diaz before. I don't want to use him as an example because I just don't think it's realistic that people think he's a great hitter now. I don't think he's a great hitter. He's not going to be ranked. My ranking of him is probably going to piss a lot of people off. But the guy who I want to talk about is Jackie Bradley Jr., because he's sort of the great example here. He's young, has prospect pedigree, has, you know, some major league success, but more disappointment. And now he's just absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. And how far up do you put a guy like Jackie Bradley Jr. after 6 weeks, even admitting that you don't think this level of performance is real? And, you know, I put together the draft outfield rankings. Every time I look at this ranking, I inch him up slightly. But you know, I still have him in the 30s among outfielders. Mike, where do you see him, and are there other players similar to him where you can find good reasons to believe that that there's been a real improvement, but you want to make sure you're not going completely overboard?
I'm glad you brought him up, because I do believe in him. And something I started doing last year when re-ranking, and I'm doing it this year, is I started looking at calendar year as opposed to just the last few months. You know, what's really interesting about Bradley, when you add that to the analysis, he hasn't just been good this year. He was good and really good in the second half of last year. We're past the point of a hitter who's had a good 4 weeks or a good 6 weeks. He's a very solid baseball player. Now, it doesn't all necessarily translate to fantasy. It's not a huge power profile. The steals are not as high as I think you'd expect based on his defensive speed. But he's a hitter. I might have him a little bit higher than that, even maybe like top 25. You know, the other example of somebody like this, and it's more of an obvious over-the-head example, but Yoenis Cespedes. Yoenis Cespedes is a player who everybody coming into this year, and I did it too, he had a hot 6 weeks, or he had a hot 4 weeks. How many times did you guys hear that this winter? And I probably said it once or twice. If you look at him over, including tonight, you know, I'm talking on Wednesday night, I believe he has 43 home runs in the last calendar year. And Nolan Arenado, I believe, is at the top of that list. He's close to 50. But Cespedes is top 4 or 5 with that home run number. People often look at a player and they make this mistake where they look at the beginning of this year and they look at a section and they make judgments, I think, too far one way or the other based on a 4 or 6 week period. we often have more to look at with that with veterans, and we kind of forget that. So, yeah, Bradley's someone I like from that standpoint. You know, Cespedes is someone I like from that standpoint. And there's a couple other guys like that out there who, if you go past these small sample size, you can really see something.
I think some of the small sample sizes are relevant, though, when you look at things like sort of contextual factors and things that you can't really account for statistically. Like, a good example of this is Marcell Ozuna. I think just getting a fresh start and having, you know, Barry Bonds as the hitting coach and having Don Mattingly, a new manager there, and really solidifying him as an everyday player again, I think that's something that's really helped him, and he's taken off this year. And he's a guy, like both of you guys were saying, where with Jackie Bradley, where we knew what he could do. He hit 23 home runs as a rookie in 2014. So we know sort of what Marcell Ozuna can do, and now he's starting to tap back into that potential again. So I think some of the small samples are relevant, but I agree, for the most part, you want to look at it at a broader picture than just these last 6 weeks or whatever it is now.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, there are, it's, and to tie it back to Jackie Bradley Jr., you know, he had the same thing. He had, you know, 3 or 4 weeks where he was just completely unconscious last year, and it's all information. They're all data points. You know, well, George, you're in New England. Where are you on Bradley?
I didn't think he would hit for as much power as he did, or as he's doing right now. I mean, if you go back and look at his minor league track record, he was never a guy who hit a lot of home runs. So I think that's the part of this that stands out to me the most. I think we always knew he could be a guy who had the potential to hit close to 300 during stretches, but he was always a very streaky hitter. It's hard to discount that he had nearly a full season of at-bats in the major leagues, which he hit under 200, and that now he's a completely different sort of guy, or that he's corrected enough issues where he's tapping into the ability he's always had. It's really strange. I think most people in Boston coming into the year would have taken like a 230 average. Instead, he's basically Mike Trout. He's playing gold glove defense, and he's leading the league in almost every offensive category, including slugging. It doesn't make much sense. I can't see a way that this is sustainable. But that being said, I still think this is still a very good player, and he's putting himself in a position where he, sooner or later, he might be near the top of that order in Boston. If he keeps doing this, I mean, I don't see how they can keep batting him lower in the lineup. He's going to be hitting fourth or fifth at some point this summer if he keeps doing this. So I think there's still a chance here where people aren't going to anchor his value as like a top 25, 30 outfielder. I think you'd be able to trade for him and give up less than that type of value to go get him. So there, as crazy as it seems, there might actually be a buying opportunity here because his value is so inflated right now. It's really hard to actually figure out what that value is for him, what a fair price would be in a trade.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I think that makes sense. Going to the other side of the equation, I think, Mike, you touched on this before, but pitching is a lot easier to make rash generalizations about after 6 weeks, just because there's more data that's real with pitchers 6 weeks into a season than there is with hitters.
Well, there's that, and there's also, you know, a couple of examples who I have in Tout Wars. So, you know, Aaron Nola, you know, I've watched him, you know, I'm here. I've kind of seen the improvement. Ryan Watt our own Ryan Watt at Baseball Prospectus wrote a great piece on Nola about the evolution, you know, of his pitches. And you kind of have to make those judgments with pitchers. You have to look at what they're doing on the mound, what they're doing with their craft. And it's not merely statistical. You have to look at that big picture. Now, on the other hand, you know, someone like Shelby Miller, who I believed in, clearly is having mechanical problems. He looked a little bit better his last time out before tonight against the Yankees. I don't know how it's going to turn out. Yeah, he's given up two runs in the first. But you have to kind of look at what pitchers are doing in the early going and make some snap decisions. You can't just sit there, you know, with one hitter who's having a bad 6 weeks out of 14 hitters. You have the luxury of saying, all right, well, I'll wait, I'll be patient. You know, if it doesn't work out, that's fine. With six starters on your team typically, or five starters, you can't sit there for another 6 weeks or for another seven or eight starts and say, yeah, you know, that this guy is, you know, going to be okay. You know, he's going to be fine. In an only league, maybe you have to, because the alternatives are typically dreck. But in any other format, you usually have to bail, particularly if you see a reason for it. And it's not just all, you know, I shouldn't say all, because, you know, we know now that it's changing or we're evolving on this, but it's not all bad at ball luck or changes that, you know, just go beyond, or changes that go beyond that, I should say.
So, Mike, give me an example of a pitcher who you are, you know, firmly ready to drop, you know, a tier or two at this point of the season based on what you've seen.
Well, let's see. I mentioned Miller, who's kind of obvious. I'm trying to look for somebody a little less obvious.
Matt Harvey.
Well, Harvey's somebody I would drop a tier. So, yeah, Matt Harvey is someone who, and that's a good example. I wouldn't drop him two tiers.
Right.
But I think you have to drop him a tier. He's looked good in spurts in every outing. He has an inning in almost every game, with the exception of one that I can think of where he hasn't looked good. So the overall results could get better, but you can't rely on that at this point. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be physical. At least there's nothing that the Mets are saying or that anyone has said that indicates it's a physical problem. But there's definitely a problem. You can see it when you watch him pitch. And when you don't have an answer, you can't keep treating somebody like he's an elite option.
Yeah. Opposite. What about the opposite question? It's easier to move guys up because it's more fun to move guys up. But
it's more fun to move guys up. But also you can, again, you can watch pitchers and see the positive. You know, I mentioned Nola before. You can kind of see the positive in what guys are doing. And it's easy to get excited about players as a result. You know, so Nola's an example. I think, you know, we've talked about him at length, but Vince Velasquez is certainly another guy. Now, Velasquez is kind of interesting because he's somebody, you know, if you were just looking at this year alone, you know, and we kind of talk about the balance between last year and this year, if you were just looking at this year alone, you could be tempted to move him aggressively up into, you know, what we had as the four-star tier. For me, though, I'm not quite comfortable doing that. And, you know, you're kind of talking about this with Diaz. You know, Velasquez is a different example because I certainly think in the long term he has more sustainability. But based on what he's kind of done in the past, based on durability, based on control or command, I'm more inclined to put him in the three-star and make him earn his way up into those higher tiers, you know, based on, you know, his not just this year but his track record as well.
Brett, we've talked about this guy a bunch. Rich Hill. I mean, what do you do with a guy like that who all you had to go off of last year ranking him in the preseason was like three or four starts, and now he's continued to pitch well, and there's just no huge body of work to evaluate the guy with. So how do you handle situations like that when you're approaching a midseason ranking update?
Hill is a fun scenario just because – you know, if he wasn't such an injury risk, I think I'd be pretty comfortable thinking of him as a borderline four-star option at this point. You know, just watching him, he's and it's really incredible that he was completely out of baseball a year ago.
Yeah, in I think it was what, like August or July, he was pitching for independent ball on Long Island.
Like, yeah,
he was an indie ball.
Yeah, it's crazy. His breaking ball gets so much movement, and it's I kind of flash back to George. You probably don't remember this all that well, but watching Jeff Nelson. Like would pitch for the Yankees in the late, like mid to late 90s. What his slider had just what looked like twice as much movement as everyone else's slider.
That pitch was so hard to get a read on, absolutely.
And it's from the opposite side, but Hill has that, he's got that type of breaking ball that starts moving, and then all of a sudden when you think it has a normal amount of movement, it just jumps, and it keeps going. It's something else. And, you know, the strikeouts, I think, are going to be there. He's not going to win all that many games for now, but I do think he'll get traded. You know, I'm buying on Rich Hill, and you know, there's always the chance that the ride ends tomorrow, which is really sad. But that's also why we should enjoy every moment we have with Rich Hill before it's gone.
That sounds like a line from the CW teen drama that would be called Rich Hill.
One Rich Hill?
One Rich Hill, yes.
One man.
Enjoy every moment. High school is forever.
One man, one curveball, potentially one season. Rich Hill.
I love going off the rails at near the end of a podcast.
That's good. Yeah. So any other, Mike, were there any players that you had that we haven't mentioned that you had a really tough time figuring out where to put in the list that you were putting together?
Valencia.
Well, I moved him up, but there were probably a few. We're not going to talk about him every week, George.
I know.
There were probably a few hitters like that. And, you know, in a broader sense, what I would say about these ranks, third base, so Brett and I split this up by position, and third base was actually fairly predictable in terms of the guys at the top. You know, we moved Manny Machado to short because he's eligible there now. You know, even in ESPN standard leagues, which is a 10-game, he's eligible there. I'd say maybe, you know, if you're ranking 30 players at every position, you're moving like five guys conservatively, 10 guys aggressively, a tier up or down one way or the other. But there's probably one or two guys at each position that you're like, huh, you know, what do I do with him? Like, where do I put this guy based on the start? So in a broader sense, Brett, there aren't that many players that I have that moment where I pause and I'm like, gee, what do I do? It's fairly intuitive. And some of it, quite honestly, is a correction where if I had a feeling about a player and at the beginning and I was reserved about him, the start might confirm that I should have moved him up earlier and now I'm correcting it. And kind of same thing the other way. You know, if there's a player that I had some reservations about, I might move him down. And Valencia, George, to your point, is a player that, quite honestly, I was wrong about. And that's another important part about these rankings is not being too inflexible and not being like, I had this feeling about a player and I'm going to stick to it until the bitter end and I look ridiculous. You know, I'm not going to move Valencia up with, you know, obviously, with Nolan Arenado and Chris Bryant, but he clearly belongs in a higher stratosphere than where we had him.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I mean, we get stuff wrong all the time on both ends of the spectrum. There are guys we were high on who have come out and performed terribly or gotten injured, and then there's guys we didn't expect to do anything that are performing at a high level. Yeah. So you got to be flexible both ways with it. You can't just pick and choose which cases you like and which ones you don't.
I think the other point I want to make here, that there was a school of thought years ago about, you know, buying high, selling low. I kind of like the idea. You know, I've heard the phrase coined of buying high, and what that really means, and this applies more in shallower leagues. Like, so last year, and I brought this example up on the show before, last year around this time of the year, I traded Lucas Duda in a 12-team mix for Dallas Keuchel. And the mentality was, you know, I think of the guy who traded Keuchel is that he's not going to keep this up. I certainly didn't think he'd be a Cy Young pitcher, but I looked at what he was doing. I'm like, you know what? Dallas Keuchel's a solid pitcher. I need pitching. You know, Lucas Duda is good, but it's 12-team mix. I can get this power. I can't get this kind of pitching. That's the kind of thing you're looking for. These rankings, to me, I think they can be academic. What you really want them to do is you want them to be a useful tool for you going forward. You know, when you're putting together trades or in a shallower league, if you're actually looking at free agents that you can pick up. So that's what we're hoping, you know, when these are published next week, that's what we're really hoping these do for our subscribers.
Yep.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for those early next week. And there will be, I'm sure, more talk about those on the podcast next week as well.
Yep. All right. So that's going to do it for that segment. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap things up. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 91 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for super premium membership, access to the Bat Signal, Fantasy Answering Service. Don't forget, follow us all on Twitter. I'm at George Bissell. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. He tweets a lot. It's entertaining. You should go follow him. Email us at flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. For Brett Sayer and Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.